Hi, and welcome to today's meeting of Book Hoarders Anonymous. Let's all begin by introducing ourselves.
Hi, I'm Shannon, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm Erin, and I'm a book hoarder.
Hi, Erin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Book Hoarders.
Hello, I'm Shannon.
And I'm Erin, and we are the main book hoarders. We are coming to you the day before Halloween.
This whole monthly schedule is not really working out so well.
Not really. But, you know, we try. That's all we can do.
Yeah.
It seems like we had a good choice of book, though, because it fit right into Halloween.
It did.
And we'll talk about more about it later. We have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson. The first book I ever scanned for myself. Yeah, it was a pretty momentous experience, I have to say. We'll talk about it in a bit. But what have you been reading this month?
Well, first of all, I should say that I'm doing this podcast from rainy Washington State, where I am staying with a friend for a few weeks and thinking about moving. So my reading has not been very, I have not been a very productive reader because I came out here on the 18th of October and just really kind of like hadn't done a whole lot of reading this whole month. It's kind of not been a good reading month for me. But I did read, let's see. I think the best book I read this last month was the book we're talking about.
Well, that's good.
And then I read on the plane out here, I read a book called Beauty by Nancy Butcher, which I got on Bookshare. And it's a young adult retelling of Snow White.
Hmm.
And I liked it because it was very... it was a very girl power type of story, and it talked a lot about body image because, you know, the princess is, she's learned as soon as she hit her teenage years that she is, that the way to get her mother's love is by not, you know, outshining her in beauty. So she does everything she can to make herself ugly. She eats, smears goop all over her face mm-hmm. to make it, you know, to make her break out. And she, you know, does all this stuff. And of course, you know, at least I knew as, you know, an astute adult reader that like it wasn't going to work out very well for her. And then, you know, she ends up being sent away to this quote unquote special academy where, the most beautiful girls in the kingdom are being sent. And even though she's not really one of them, yet, you know, she's a threat to her mother. So you know, the queen sends her off there, and there's danger at the academy, and it's I liked it because it had some good things to say about accepting, you know, your body image that I think is really important to teenage girls, and I liked that it was about the major conflict. You know, the thing that makes the heroine kind of come into her own involves like having to rescue a female friend, and there's no romance and there's no like hot stupid guys, you know.
Yeah. That's good.
Not that I have anything wrong with that, but there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I feel like a lot of young adult fiction is very much super like about the superficial romance, and
yeah,
I'm not so much into that.
Well, at least she wasn't a vampire.
That's true.
I actually read a short story where Snow White was a vampire. It was very creepy.
Oh
yeah, it was by Neil Gaiman, who writes just excellent stuff and science fiction stuff, and it was called Snow Glass Apples, which actually was her name in the story. And when she was a little girl, the queen, who was in the story, was not evil, found out that she was a vampire, and Snow White fled into the forest and started like, well, feeding off of the forest, people in the forest. It was really weird. And so the queen was trying to get rid of her, or at least neutralize her.
Oh, that's cool.
Very creepy. It wasn't very long. It was a part of a book about, it was, I don't remember the name of the book, but it was some short vampire fiction pieces. And
fun.
Yeah, it was fun. So anyway, now that I sidetracked you, are there any other books you...
What else am I reading? I started to read, this is another like book that I picked up on the plane, and it's short, and I don't know why I haven't finished it. Well, yes, I do. I started to read Forrest Gump by Winston Groom. And like, I don't know what to think about it, because I feel like if I hadn't seen the movie, and I really like the movie, although it felt like when it came out, like I immediately began to see it over and over and over for the next like 5 or 6 years of my life.
Yeah.
But the book is very different, and I feel like if I had come into it without having seen the movie, like, I might have liked it better.
I felt the same way about it when I read it.
It's just very, like, well, I started out reading it with text-to-speech, and then I found out it was on Bard, so I downloaded it, and it was a lot easier to have, like, somebody read it to me with that awful dialect, because text-to-speech does not do very good things to the awful dialect. But then it's like... I don't know. There was one scene in particular talking about his mom, like his mama runs a boarding house, and instead of him running into Elvis, he runs into this like older lady that takes his virginity while he eats some divinity.
Yeah, that was a little bit freaky. That was,
and I was just like, wow, that's just weird.
The whole
and
book
then,
was that way.
Like, I haven't. I hear it gets weirder.
Oh yeah, big time.
I've just gotten to the point where he's out of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm about 2 hours into it. Oh. And I think it's like maybe 6 or 7
you
hours total.
You
so.
Haven't read anything yet.
Yeah.
It gets even stranger. And I read it. The first time I read it, I didn't finish it. I just couldn't take it. It was like I had just seen the movie. I mean, like within a week or two. And I could not take it. So... when it came out on Bard, I read it again. That was just recently. And I was able to finish it, but it was, I mean, I anticipated it getting stranger and stranger. So I was able to.
Yeah, that's what my, like, people that I've talked to that have read the book, like, my mom read it, and she said that like, you know, so I knew going into it that, mm-hmm. that if I should adjust my expectations and not think of it as, like, you know, a book that's going to follow the movie. You know, and I feel like what they did with the movie was like, I mean, like they improved on it
God,
a lot.
God, I love the movie. That is one of my favorite movies ever. And I just, the music is awesome. Like it totally captures the decades. I did a whole Melting Pot episode on Forrest Gump because I just love the soundtrack so much. But yeah, I mean, they definitely improved that. And I know Winston Groom wrote most of the movie script, most of the screenplay. And so that makes you kind of wonder what he thought of his own book.
I know. You know, and it's interesting to me that there's a sequel, which doesn't appear to be a sequel to the book. Like, I haven't read it, but it looks like it's a sequel to the movie.
Yeah, I know. I saw that, too. And I have not read that.
I'm a little scared to read it. I think I might pass on that one, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Any other ones?
And for my nonfiction book right now, I'm reading... Beyond Heaving Bosoms, which is by Sarah Wendell and Candy Tan, who run a website called smartbitchestrashybooks.com. And they talk but they talk about romance novels, and they love romance novels, and they're snarky about it too, in the way that I think you can only really be about like a genre that you read and enjoy.
Right.
So it's interesting, and it's like, I don't know, I'm, it's a quick read, but it's probably not, and like, I'm glad I read it, but it's going to be sort of forgettable, because it feels like it can't really decide whether it wants to be a serious, like, book about romance novels, or if they're just going to, like, you know, make weird and sometimes vaguely dirty jokes, you know?
Yeah.
So it's funny in places, it's serious in places, and it doesn't quite mesh as well as I'd like. But she's written another book, or Sarah Wendell has. I don't know what happened to Candy Tan, but because she's co-authored.
Wow, what an awesome name. That would be a great name for a romance author, Candy Tan.
Candy Tan. But she co-authored the first book. She co-authored this book, but then, like, Sarah has written a sequel called Everything I Know About Love I Read in Romance Novels, and Candy is nowhere on the author credits for that one. So makes me wonder what happened.
Well, you did better than me, because I didn't read any nonfiction this month. I was bad. I was a bad person. I'm trying to get better about reading nonfiction, because used to be I didn't read any at all, hardly. And I've tried to get better, but I didn't make it this month. Anything else before I go into my...
Oh, go ahead. I think that's been about the highlight for me.
Okay, well, I did something bad. I got distracted by hot, sexy vampires again.
Oh, no.
And I finished the Black Dagger Brotherhood series, and now I just want more. I want the next one. It doesn't come out until March of 2013.
Which at least is only 4 months away.
Yeah, it's only a few months away. And I don't know that I'm going to like that one, honestly, because I think it, from what I've read on the synopsis, it's going to focus more on the sort of like, there are these two males that are attracted to each other. And I just don't know. I don't get interested in that kind of, like, you know, gay romance.
Yeah.
When it's male on male. And I don't, it's not like, I don't know. I don't, not really prejudiced. I just don't, you know, like, it doesn't really turn, it doesn't really.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it doesn't really intrigue me that much. So I think that's what the next one's going to be about. And I'm kind of like, nah. But then there are always, you know, some sort of subplots in there. You know, the book kind of does, they usually refer to other people. So it's, you know, it's going to be fine. I'm sure that I'll read it.
You know, it's really funny about those books that, like, I read the first four and then basically, like, lost interest in them until, and like, sort of thought I had it back for a little while when, like, all my friends started reading them.
Right.
But I just, it's weird because I really have no interest in reading them, but I keep following discussions about the series, like, really,
I mean,
avidly.
I know.
And
people...
I feel that way also about, like, about the Song of Ice and Fire books, because I had to quit reading book five. I was like, eventually I was like, okay, I'm never going to finish this. I'm going to wait till he finishes the whole freaking series.
Right. I just, The Brotherhood books are not something that I'm going to read again. Like, I know people who have read them, like, a bazillion times. You know, they keep rereading them. I don't like them that much. But I like them enough to keep reading them, like, one after another, you know. I don't like them enough to keep rereading them. And I think one reason that I like them is because the guy who did them for Audible, or Penguin Audiobooks, rather, is really good. And so that kind of kept my interest.
Yeah,
he's so
he
good.
Is a really excellent narrator.
Yeah. And so I finished that series, which admittedly I only had like two books left to finish. I also read a couple of things that were kind of edgy that I found on Bard that I was very pleased to find there. One was called Natural Law by Joey Hill, female Joey Hill. And it's about a cop who is a submissive, and there's a mistress who is murdering submissives, and he goes undercover to find out who it is. And he can do that because he's a sub, and he goes into the clubs and gets his own mistress and tells her what's going on, and she helps him figure out, you know, who it is. And I did not, I mean, the ending to me was not, I did not predict the ending. It was unpredictable, but it seemed to me that it was also contrived to be unpredictable. In mm-hmm. other words, she tried a little too hard to make it unpredictable.
Right.
You know, who's the evil mistress? You know, she kind of went a little bit out of her way to make it someone you wouldn't expect. But right. all that said, I mean, it was pretty well written for just being a, you know, a silly little dominant submission, you know, romance book. It was better written than I thought. I mean, it wasn't like great literature or anything, but she did, you know, it was a decent book. Another book I read that was really edgy, it was for young adult readers, and it's called Almost Perfect by Brian Catcher. And it's about a guy who is in high school, and there is a girl in his class who's, well, not really a girl.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was really neat. It was really interesting the way the author explored various issues that surround, that surround gender identity.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
It was a really good book. I really enjoyed it a lot. And so, you know, how he handles his friends' issues with, you know, gender and how he, you know, deals with falling in love with a girl who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, you know, very interesting. The last book I think I'll discuss is another young adult book that was not, it was very, it, it explored what it means to be an American. It was called American Dervish by Ayed Attar. I don't know if I said that right, but that's okay. He won't be listening. And it was about this kid who grew up Muslim. He was Pakistani, or his parents were, and they came to America, and that, he was born here, I guess. And about issues faced by children and women in traditionally Islamic communities. And it was very sort of eye-opening. I mean, you know, he had to struggle a lot with his own identity. You know, is he a Muslim first and an American second? Or is it vice versa? Or, you know, how is this all going to work out? And it showed, you know, not necessarily his struggles so much, although that was in there, but also the struggles of people around him, particularly the women, to fit in to that community, that ethos, I guess you would say. You know, his mother was a pretty, you know, his father and mother were pretty forward thinking people, but the people around them, you know, were very traditional, and how they all coped with that.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
So it was a fun book. I kind of got distracted in the middle by the hot, sexy vampires, but I did finish the book.
Well,
it was good.
You know.
Yeah. Well, you know. So anyway, that's the highlights. I did read a lot more this month than I thought that I would, but it was fun. And that being said, should we get our news out of the way before we do our book?
Let's get our news out of the way. Should we start with J.K. Rowling and the casual vacancy?
Yeah, that was released this month. It is out, I know, in ebook format and regular paperback format, and I think it's now on audio, you know, in Audible.
I think I saw it there.
I think so.
It looks interesting. I've noticed that the reactions have been very mixed, to put it
mildly. I mean, if you're expecting something Harry Potter, this is not it. And actually, I think it sounds sort of boring. I mean, I probably will read it at some point, but the descriptions I've heard about it don't make me sound like it's something I want to go out of my way to read.
I got it from Bookshare. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's on the SD card of doom where, you know, all the books go. But I don't know. I don't know when I'll get to it. You know, it does look boring. And like one of the reviews I saw said that it felt to the reviewer like she was trying very hard to distance herself from the whole Harry Potter thing, because this book is very adult.
Right.
The kind of thing where, you know, she was like, you know, how many F-bombs can you drop in a single sentence, really? You know? And that, like, I find that really irritating when people do it, like, outside of books. So I can't imagine that's the kind of thing that's going to, like, you know, make me
wanna run out and buy
really
it.
Relish reading it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the subject matter just sounds, I mean, it sounds kind of dull. I heard it wasn't dull, but, I mean, this town where there's this political stuff going on and these people, you know, are vying for the political offices, and it just doesn't sound like it's interesting. Now, that said, I have heard things like there's a lot of drug use in the book and some somewhat semi-non-consensual sexual activity going on in the book that, I don't know, maybe may liven it up a little bit. But I think it's like she's exposing, I don't know, the dregs of society here a little bit, maybe? The you know, highlighting people's vices a little bit, but maybe I'm reading too much into it because I haven't read it. I have heard from various Americans that they did not like the book. I've heard from various UK people that they liked the book. So maybe there's a cultural thing here. I don't know. I've heard someone suggest that that might be possible. So
yeah,
I don't know, but hmm.
But it's definitely, you know, the kind of thing that I would want to go into without trying very hard to check my expectations about this, like, being anything like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
It's like the Forrest Gump thing. Like, you know, I knew going into that one that it was going to be way different from the movie.
I think that problem with Forrest Gump is that the situations he gets himself into are so improbable that you're like, oh, really? Oh, come now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And I don't think I'll have as much problem with the Rowling book because it's not going to be fantasy, and I'm totally expecting that. And that's just not going to bother me. But I think the Forrest Gump bothered me because it was like, really? Oh, come now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You can't be serious. And I'm not a person who really likes satire, so I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it didn't work well for me. I just think her book just sounds kind of like I wouldn't really be interested.
Yeah.
Next up, Amazon and Audible have done this really cool merger thing. It's not all one company, of course, but Amazon has given Audible some access to its WhisperNet technology so that you can be in one place on your Kindle and have the same book on your audio player and have those two devices synchronize, which
that's
I think
really
is
cool.
Really cool. That's awesome. So that you can pick up where you left off.
You could read books from your Kindle. Like, you could listen to audiobooks from your Kindle.
Yeah, but I think they're talking about doing it over devices. Like,
your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because if you synchronize something on your Kindle, I mean, if I have my Kindle for PC open, and I, let's just say that my Kindle app on my iPhone was accessible, ha, frickin' ha, I could go in there and be at the same point on my iPhone that I was on the PC in reading a book. So I think it's a crossover thing on dual devices, you know, your iPhone audio, you know, an Audible app on your iPhone or your Kindle app, wherever you have it.
That's awesome.
So, you know, not having an Audible account, I can't experience this firsthand. So any of you all who've, you know, had experience with this, let us know how it works.
Yeah,
Audible
absolutely gave,
as a promotional, there were 21 free books that you could get either on Audible or Kindle or both, even if you did not have an Audible account. I mean, I think you had to sign up for, you know, like the month free trial or something. I don't think they're offering that anymore, but they were offering it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw tweets about it.
Yeah. So that can be really cool. And like I said, if anyone has experience, please let us know how it works.
And finally, speaking of mergers, I don't want to get like too into this, but I thought it was interesting that Random House and Penguin, which are two of the big six publishers in the United States, they're apparently going to be merging, and this has prompted speculation on Twitter about whether or not they're going to be Random Penguin.
A random penguin is just wandering through the streets.
Yeah. Which, why not? but the thing that seems interesting to me about this is that Random House is one of the publishers that works for Bookshare, and Penguin is not. So I hope that this means that that Bookshare will start to get Penguin books also in their catalog.
That would be awesome.
I mean, and hopefully it's not going to be the other way around where they're like, well, we don't have this contract with Bookshare anymore.
Right.
So I don't know anything more about that other than that it's happening in the whole Random Penguin thing, which cracks me up.
Wandering Random Penguins.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, so that's interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, you get more books on Bookshare from this merger. I mean, I would look at it in a positive light.
Yeah,
so
I certainly hope so.
Yeah, I hope that happens.
Because Penguin is one of the publishers that's not. And you know, more books for me is something I'm all about.
Yeah. And, you know, people just wonder, what is this with you and books? But there can never be too many books.
Exactly.
Never.
My SD card is not full yet.
How big is this SD card?
Well, it's only a 16 gig SD card, but mm-hmm. And it is like mostly full. I should, you know, clarify that. But like a lot of the books that I have are in text, so it's a smaller
right
file size.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. At least it's not quite full. I have a 116 gig SD card that I have in my Victor Stream. That's almost full, and it's actually the one I use almost exclusively for books. And I have a 32 gig SD card that I got when I bought my PlexTalk Pocket that I use for other things other than books. It really doesn't need to, it really should be the one in the Victor Stream because that's where I have all my books and I keep having to juggle things so that it's not all full. But I haven't like reformatted the cards yet.
I need a 32 gig SD card because yeah. I think my BookSense would take it, but they're kind of spendy. So
yeah, I don't know. One. I mean, I bought this one when I bought my PlexTalk Pocket because I think I got it on, I don't know, with Amazon. I got it with something else, and it came and they are definitely spendy. So I only have one.
Yeah,
definitely on the spendy side. But at least it's not as expensive as buying a 64 gig or, God forbid, a 128 gig, which I think they make.
Wow.
I think I've heard that either they're making them or they're coming out with them soon.
Whew.
Well, so now we will move along to our book. We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
Really liked this book.
I did too.
I thought that it was the kind of book that I started to read it like late at night and was like, man, I just really want to keep going with it and knew that I had to go to sleep. So I did put it down. And then the next day, I basically did nothing else.
But read the book, yeah.
But read the book. And it was just, it was fascinating.
I thought because so too.
And I was trying to describe it to my friend that I'm staying with because, you know, she's like, well, I don't read horror. And I said, well, it's horror,
really not
like in the sense of Stephen King. Like there are no like monsters from beyond the grave or whatever. It's creepy.
Right. It's
and I thought it was really especially interesting, especially because like and here, you know, totally going to spoil this. So, yeah. You know, like I had not gone in with any real expectations. And then I got to a certain point and I was like, oh, I wonder if it was Mary Cat that poisoned the family.
Right.
And it was like, you know, it wasn't even anything. I don't ever really think that they admit that she, well, no, they, Constance does admit that she did it, that she covered up for her.
Right. Toward the end.
At the end, but it's very like it was very subtly done, you know, like mm-hmm. It was just kind of this like this sense of things not being quite right.
Yeah, and you know, you read in the beginning where Mary Cat says something like she was going through town, and all the people were like staring at her or making forced conversation with her. And she says something like, she just wanted to walk on their bodies or something like that. And I was
yeah.
like, what? When I first read that, and I didn't really think anything sinister about it. I thought she was just a pissy teenager. You know, when I first read that, I thought she just doesn't like anybody, which is true. But there was a whole lot more to that. She has very antisocial tendencies mixed with a healthy dose of Asperger's syndrome, I think.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting. Like I read some commentary about the book afterwards, and I thought it was like one of the things I read was they were talking about the character of Constance and how like she's the only really good character in the book, and how like it's a huge sacrifice that she ends up basically giving up her sanity.
pretty
in,
much
in order
yeah.
to protect Mary Cat, you know, because, you know, she's talking about, like, when Charles shows up, you know, she talks about, you know, how, oh, well, maybe I really haven't been doing you any favors, and maybe we really should leave and go mingle with the world. And then in the end, you know, she decides that they're just going to stay in this, like, half burned out house.
Oh my
you
God,
know,
that just creeped me out.
Hiding from everybody completely.
Yeah. And I often wondered, you know, I mean, like, it's one of those books that I kind of wish there was a sequel. It would probably be a really bad sequel, though.
Yes.
But I sort of wish there was one. It ended so, for me, it just didn't feel finished.
I don't know, though. Like, I don't know what you could do with the sequel. I see what you're
make
saying.
Make everybody
but I...
better.
Yeah.
I don't like books that don't end, you know, happily. I just don't. I mean, I can deal with books that have ambiguous endings, like, you know, you're really not sure how it ended, and that's okay with me, you know. It could end more than one way, but I do not like books with sad endings where it could have been something else, and it's so easy to imagine that it could have been this other way if, you know, if she'd had a little more courage or, you know, whatever.
And what I thought was interesting, like I was trying to put myself in the shoes of, like, the villagers, you know, and they're not very well, like, I guess, like, you know, I was trying to figure out, like, what was going on in their heads, you know, like, why there was such, like, enough hatred that they would just set the house, like, you know, torch the place in an angry mob. And I guess, like... that must be a theme that Shirley Jackson, like, deals with a lot, because, you know, her other famous story is The Lottery, where, you know, spoiler alert, at the end, you know, there's an angry mob and it stones the woman
to death.
And because she won the lottery. And so it's like, you know, I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting how she writes about, like, how angry and mindless, like, you know, seemingly decent people are when they kind of get their blood up, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was just, when I read this book for the first time, it was the first book I ever scanned into the computer, and I read it with the Flex Talk voices. Sappy 4, I mean, it was like a long time ago. Flex Talk. There was one particular voice, and they were all spooky because they all weren't that great. But there was this one voice named Terry. It was a female Terry. And I read the book in that voice, and it was, like, really creepy.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. It was really, really spooky sounding. And very sort of dark and mysterious and kind of ethereal, kind of in this minor key. It was really interesting. And like I said, all the voices sounded somewhat spooky, but that one just kind of, like, really fit the book. If you're going to do it in text-to-speech, it was a good voice to hear it in. But then I read it again on Bard, and I think, I mean, I really did like the pace of the book. Toward the middle there, though, it kind of did seem like it was getting a little slow.
It did. There was not a whole lot happening.
Yeah, and I just, when I reread it again, I realized... yet again, how much that Charles guy creeped me out.
Oh, yeah. They were all such creepy people.
I know.
I mean,
they really were.
Except for Constance, you know, like you have Uncle Julian, who just basically is, like, obsessing about this one day. And
when everyone died.
I mean, that can't have made him a pleasant person to live with.
Right, exactly. And
I, like, there was one moment, though, that like, had me really confused, and I keep wanting, like, somebody to explain it to me, where Julian is talking to Charles, and Charles is talking about Mary Cat and how, you know, he's, you know, he wants to get rid of her, and Julian's like, well, Mary Cat's dead. She died of neglect at the orphanage.
Right.
And I was like, I didn't understand that, like... Because, and then it was like, well, had there been any interaction between the two? Like, is she dead? Like, is this, like, her ghost?
Yeah, I think it's just that she tried to stay away from Uncle Julian as much as possible. I think there was, like, some minor interaction with him, but I think it was more like her watching him more than anything else. And you know, she would say things like, today I have to be nice to Uncle Julian. But yet, I mean, I think her version of being nice to him was like staying out of his way and not provoking him.
Yeah.
I think it may be more of a statement that he just wasn't aware of much that was going on around him because he was obsessing about this particular day.
Yeah.
And he really didn't have much, you know, going on in his head other than that. So I think, you know, that may have been a lot of it, but like, yeah, she needed some medication or something. She needed to see several therapists, I think. But yeah, I think you're right. The only good character really in this was Constance. And she was, you know, all throughout the book, she kind of made me a little bit upset because she was like, it's almost like she was too good.
Yeah.
But then at the end, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like she was almost too good of a person and too self-sacrificing.
Yeah, sacrificing her entire life for this crazy sister of hers that, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah.
It did seem a little much.
But, I mean, all that said, I really, really did like the book. And I think Shirley Jackson does do a very good job creating some really creepy scenarios. And you know, like, it's not horror like Monsters, but it really did bring chills to my spine just reading that. And The Lottery.
Yeah.
And even The Haunting of Hill House was the same way. Although I have to say there was a point in that book that got kind of slow, too, towards the middle. I'm noticing a trend here. But I don't think that one, it may not be on BARD, I'm not sure.
I don't think it is, because I looked for it, and it was not there.
It's basically these people who go and stay in this house that's supposedly haunted, and what happens to them, particularly one person in the house who goes a little crazy. And you have to kind of wonder if it really is haunted after you read the book, like, is this haunted, or did she just go nuts?
Yeah.
So, I would rate that book probably, I'd give it a 4 out of 5, if only because the middle got a little bit draggy for me.
And I think that's about where I was, too. I think that's how I rated it on Goodreads.
So, I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I think I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. And then that being said, I mean, like, something that I was wondering, what is the scariest book you think you've ever read?
That's a good question. I think there were moments in, like, I don't know. I guess I just have to be cliched and say that like, Stephen King has written some of the scariest books I've ever read. Like, there are moments in The Stand, which I've read 3 times now, and even, like, on the 3rd time reading, I still can't read the Lincoln Tunnel scene without kind of preparing myself for it, you know.
Yeah, that scene is hard to read. And I also think the whole deal with, like, the trash can man setting those tanks afire, that scene to me was like, holy crap. Because he just described it so vividly, you know, even to the sound that the tank would make when it exploded.
Yeah.
And that to me was like, whoa, you know. So I think, yeah, I mean, I agree that book has some of the scariest scenes that I've ever read in it.
A non-Stephen King book I read that was really scary was called The Keeper, and it was by Sarah Langan. And I think I got it on Bookshare. I don't know if she's got any. I think she's got a few things on BARD. And I don't, like, it's been years since I read it, but I remember that it was like kind of in Stephen King territory. It was set in small town Maine. And I read it on a cold and drizzly day, and the book was very atmospheric, and it was talking about, like, how dead this town was, and there was a mill that was, like, you know, had been the town's livelihood, but now it wasn't. And it was just like, it did give me chills. And I don't really remember anything specific about what happened, but, you know, it was still very, like, creepy and atmospheric that way.
There was one
which
book,
I think is how I like my horror. You know, I'm not I also am not necessarily, like, always into the, like, you know, zombies, you know.
Yeah. I think one book that I read that really kind of scared me was something that someone recommended to me. And it was called The House Next Door by Ann River Siddons. And
oh, I just recently put that on my SD card.
She, the person who recommended it to me had read We Had Always Lived in the Castle, and I think I reviewed it on that list, I think. And she wrote back to me and said, what do you think about this book? You know, have you read this? And I read it on her recommendation, and it was honestly, it was so creepy. It was about a house. I mean, it was sort of like took the haunted house theme. And these people lived next door to this house, and it was about all the different people who moved into the house and all the crazy weird things that happened to them, and how the woman, you know, the main character in the book is trying to convince her husband that it's the house that's doing it, and how, you know, what happens to them and their friends all because of this house. And they figure out what's going on, kind of. And just, I don't know, it was weird. And it sounds weird, and it actually was, but it was really creepy. And how the house changes them and changes everyone just by being there. But I enjoyed it despite the fact that I had to listen to Martha Harmon Pardee narrate it. That being said, though, she does an excellent Southern Belle imitation. Because there's like a woman in that book who is the ultimate Southern airhead, and she just does that voice just so perfectly. It was wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So I would recommend that if you like real creepy, sort of atmospheric kind of books. I mean, there's no zombies running around. There aren't any ghosts or anything. It's just strange things that happen. Very improbable things that happen to these
people.
Even
Stephen King has written some very good atmospheric books that aren't so much about monsters running around. I think that there are moments in Dolores Claiborne that are like really chilling, and then like you have the whole like Misery, like that.
Oh,
that's really scary, and it's all the scarier because you know it could happen.
Yeah,
I mean, you would hope that it never would
not,
because you know Annie Wilkes is crazy, but
yeah, and I actually Well, my dad loved Stephen King. He used to, anyway. And he got the movie, Misery. And, you know, this is back during the era of VHS, so he rented it from Blockbuster, of course. This is how old I am. And he got it, and it was like, I was totally floored by the movie. And I didn't sit there and watch the whole movie. But I watched parts of it. And Kathy Bates was just like, you know, they just found her out of the, I mean, you know, she just fell out of the woodwork. It's not like she was really in anything before. She just burst onto the scene with this movie. And she was just perfect for the part. And I thought, oh my God, this woman is a nutcase. So I didn't read the book until a couple of years ago, actually. And it was even more chilling than the movie, if that's possible. Now, that said, some people who saw the movie really did not like the book. I actually found the book better than the movie.
I remember seeing, I have not seen the movie in years, but I do remember watching it with my family, and I was very young at the time. I think it might have like just come out on like VHS, and mm-hmm. and I remember that a point at which like some enterprising adult stood up and blocked the screen so that like it was, you know, me and my brother and sister and some friend, you know, some other, like their, like my parents' friends and their kids, and like so they wanted to make sure none of the kids saw like
the either foot cutting scene.
I'm sure it had to have been the foot cutting scene.
Oh my God! Reading that just was awful.
I knew it was coming, and I think that made it scarier for me when I read the book, because I was waiting for it, and it was just right. Like, oh,
it's coming!
Make
it's coming!
Quick.
Make it stop! Make it stop! Yeah. So that being said, this is a perfect segue into the next book that we are going to read. Seeing as how the month coming up is November, we thought it would be fitting to read 11/22/63 by Stephen King.
In November.
And it is kind of a long book. So for that reason, you know, we're putting this out at the very beginning of the month. And you should start reading it.
And we will probably not record the podcast until sometime in December when I'm back from my trip.
Yeah, and it'll give people a chance to read, you know, a good portion of the book, if not finish the book. And it is not typical Stephen King monsters and zombies. It's basically, you know, a time travel. If you could change a moment in history, what would happen kind of book.
Yeah.
focusing on the Kennedy assassination. And I've read books like this before. Well, one particular book, it was called Alternities, and it was really weird. And I can't remember the author of it, and I didn't really like it. But it was about, basically, there were a bunch of alternative Earths. And these key points in history, you know, something happened a little bit differently, kind of like the whole quantum mechanics thing. You know, something happens a bit differently and it changes the universe in some special way. And there are a lot of different alternative Earths, and some people know how to get back and forth between them. And one of them, you know, in one of them, let's say, World War II never happened. In another one, Kennedy was not assassinated. And in another one, the space program never got started, I think is what it was. And it was, you know, the ways in which the world would have been fundamentally different if these things had happened. So having read that book and thought it was really weird because there were so many alternative Earths to choose from, I'm looking forward to this one because it's about, you know, a guy who goes back in time to see if he can stop one particular thing. And I think you have read that, isn't that right?
I have read it. I loved it. So I think it'll be really interesting to talk about it because it's very much not typical Stephen King. Like he has his, like there are scary moments, I think, but you know, not, you know, like it's sort of more like he's more atmospheric and, you know, like the whole, he talks a lot about time travel and, you know, like what happens if you go back and change these things, what will happen to you? You know, like right. When you do. So it's very interesting. I think that it'll be interesting to see what people make of it.
Yeah, that would be great. And as always, we would love your feedback. We talked about our scary stories, but we'd like to hear about your favorite scary books too. And we hope that you enjoy this next book.
Yes.
So, should we wrap up with any new profound wisdom or anything?
I have no profound wisdom to offer. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I think I'll give my contact details, and you can do the same. You can reach me at Erin Edgar on Twitter. Of course, the Twitter account for Book Hoarders is Book Hoarders.
Yes, and I am at Bardsong on Twitter, Bardsong, and you can email us at bhapodcast@gmail.com, and it's bhapodcast.com for the website.
Yay.
And we're on Goodreads, so
if we are on Goodreads.
Look for us there.
We haven't been as good about updating our page as we probably should be. That goes without saying, but we are there. And each of us is there personally, too, if you want to check out our own pages. So, all that said, we will probably see you back in mid-December or so, right before the holidays. And be prepared to discuss 11/22/63.
Okay. And have a good month.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
To contact the Book Hoarders, send email to bhapodcast@gmail.com. Follow Book Hoarders on Twitter. Call us at 520-81-BOOKS, 520-812-6657. And visit the website at bhapodcast.com.